It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
It was an old friend of mine and former boss, in fact, who once referred to Omaha, Nebraska as the town that time forgot, in reference to the fact that there was day after day after day after day of temperatures in the mid to high 80s, maybe low 90s. You'd get up in the morning, have breakfast, go to the ballpark, or maybe it was an off day, you had practice, but then you go to the ballpark, you play a game that day or that night, go have dinner at some steak place or Italian place, and go back and do the same thing all over again, and you do that for 2 weeks. That is, if your team is good enough to make it through the 2 weeks. And that was thrown into doubt last night, certainly for the Texas Longhorns. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower here on The Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfn.com. If you're viewing on Twitch right now, you're seeing our producer, Snoop Daniel, and nothing else, right? An empty studio, our man behind the glass, the majordomo and aficionado of all good things with high school athletics and Flex ATX, Jonathan John Donaldson, J.J. Donaldson. We know him as Snoop Daniels back there. Are you solo right now because Jeff Howe is putting the finishing touches on another outstanding edition of the Blitz podcast right now?
Yeah, apologies to Twitch, because the only person you're seeing isn't doing much talking, so
we'll see if we can remedy that a little bit there. Snoop's in the studio. My name is Craig Way. I am in Omaha, Nebraska, with the Texas Longhorn baseball team. They come off last night's 2-1 loss to Mississippi State, and now, of course, into the elimination, or as it's more commonly referred to, the loser's bracket. They've got to start running the table through that tomorrow afternoon when they play the Tennessee Volunteers. We'll have more on that coming up here in just a moment. Jeff Howe, as I mentioned, my co-host, is in the studio adjacent to there at the ARN compound. Am I right about that, Snoop? He's you can look through the glass and see Jeff over there with Rod Babers and Matt Butler there as they wrap up another edition, another sterling edition of the Blitz podcast.
Rod is using his hands.
What else is new?
Right. No, he is animated. Somebody said that he sounds like Avery Johnson, and I kind of a little agree, but there's a tone difference between those two.
Trust me, Rod has heard it all. I've heard it all. The 7 years we did a show together back in Austin, 8 years that we did a show together back at the other place. We heard Avery Johnson. We heard Kevin Hart. We heard lots of different. Yeah, that's another one we heard. We heard lots of different comparisons there. Rod does kind of have his own unique sound. I will say that as well. So here's what we have coming up on the program. Obviously, we'll recap what's been going on up here in Omaha, what happened last night. We'll do that. At the bottom of the hour, Mike Roach, recruiting analyst, recruiting editor for Horns 24/7, will join us to give the rundown on another big football recruiting weekend that wrapped up yesterday. In fact, it wrapped up in time for Steve Sarkisian to hop on a plane and get up here to Omaha, and Sark was at the ball game here last night, and then returned back to go back to work again. So Mike Roach will be with us to talk about that. We have Inconceivable coming up later on this hour. I'll tell you one thing that's inconceivable, Snoop, is if you grind out and do all your work, as I was doing late last night when I got back to the hotel, and instead of it just being late last night or even late, it became late because of what Roger Wallace and I went through after the game. We'll get to that in a moment. But the other thing is grinding out the work and realizing that in my haste in packing up the equipment last night – I accidentally packed up my laptop charger in the broadcast equipment, which is still at the ballpark. So it may be running on fumes by the time we get done with this show. We'll see how it is. But we've got the thing stored for our inconceivable segment coming up. So we've got that ready to go as well. So all of that's going on. Okay, so here is the rundown of some of the things that happened and the way things that went down last night. First of all, great environment, great atmosphere. It was a beautiful evening for baseball. A little warm at the start, and then it cooled off. We're now, as I started to say, getting into this rhythm here in Omaha, where you have several consecutive days of temperatures in the mid to high 80s, capping out in the low 90s. And I know it's probably not the coolest thing in the world for me to be talking about that when temperatures are what, down there in the triple digits. Snoop, is that how it is?
Yeah, that's upper 80s sounds heavenly.
Yeah, right. I understand that. So right now here in Omaha it's 68 degrees. 68. The high today will be 75. Now, it'll warm up tomorrow. They had a little cool front move through after the ball game last night. It will get to 90 tomorrow. It'll actually get to 91 Wednesday. It'll be 88 on Thursday, 79 Friday, 82 Saturday, 84 Sunday. So that's the way of Omaha in June. You know, when folks ask the question, quite often they ask, why is the College World Series played in Omaha every year? And part of the reason for that is it's a very temperate climate. Now, I do know that because it's cloudy in Austin right now, they're expecting the high to only be about 93 today. So that's nice. It's cooled off a little bit there. And then the possibility of clouds, maybe even a little rain tomorrow. So you might have a couple of decent days, climatologically speaking, and then it'll get back up in the mid to high 90s as the week progresses. So in any event, it's that's part of the reason why they have that. So you're in that mode where you have all these days in a row of good weather. And that was the case by and large last night. It was a little warm, obviously, at the start. And it was warm during the afternoon game between Virginia and Tennessee. But then cool off and was cool off enough. Unfortunately, also cooled off the Longhorn Bats, as has been well discussed and well analyzed right now. And by the way, those of you who are texting in on the Specs text line at 337-3776. Jeff, obviously, will be able to hop in on some of those. I don't have access to the Specs text line to be able to read the text from where I am, but Jeff will be able to once he joins the program with your thoughts and you're weighing in with your thing. So I'm not avoiding anything that anybody's texting in. Just don't have access to it up here. But I can tell you, from my perspective, what I saw last night. And what I saw was two things. I saw some outstanding pitching from Mississippi State, and I saw some perhaps too eager or not put into practice what had been practiced at the plate in terms of plate routine by the Longhorn baseball team. David Pierce talked about it in the postgame news conference. And watching the team as I have throughout the season, and watching them in ball games as I have throughout the season, and in their practice routines here in Omaha as they have been, and watching them getting ready, what they go through. And as we know, practice is different than ball games itself. But what they normally do, and what they did in the regional, what they did in the super regional, what they did in a lot of the regular season games was not what they did last night. Last night, you had a combination of Will Bednar getting off to a good start, and he had really good stuff, and his record and his ERA showed that going into the game. But once he got going with strikeouts then, and it almost seemed like it was contagious. I know that comes up a lot, and Coach Pierce was asked about it in the news conference after the game. Is something like that contagious? And he said it can be, where guys get anxious when they're watching somebody who's really dealing like Bednar was. And he didn't have overpowering stuff. He wasn't throwing 98, 99, but he had great control, well-placed fastballs. He did work some deep counts against Texas. Mitchell Daly, I think, worked 3-2 counts in all but one of his at-bats. And yet had the wherewithal to come back and make a really good pitch on 2-2 or 3-2 that really got the Longhorns out of balance and out of kilter, to where you'd have some guys go up and take the called third strike, and then other guys go, well, I'm going to go up there, and then go up there and expand the zone and swing at pitches outside the zone. So that's when your strikeouts pile up. He pitched well. The Longhorns also helped him by not having enough plate discipline, and David Pierce talked about it in the postgame about swing plane and not expanding that zone and being able to keep your swing within the proper swing plane, things of that nature. As we speak right now, they're on the field practicing. They're at nearby Abraham Lincoln High School here in Omaha. They'd had two practices at Bellevue East High School, and they're over at Abraham Lincoln High School. And the high school facilities that they use are really good high school facilities with natural grass. And because he wants the team working on natural grass, since obviously TD Ameritrade Park here in Omaha is a natural grass surface. And I think we saw that as well. They had the Longhorns committed one error last night, but really that was kind of a hustle error early in the ball game when Trey Faltini was having a really race after a slow-moving ground ball. And it would have taken, had to have taken really a perfect throw to get the runner going up the line. As it was, when he came, you know, charging in, he had to flick it pretty quickly, and it was a high throw. It was ruled an error, but that's a tough error to give because it was going to be a tough play to play. Other than that, they played very well defensively, even with the difficulty of the outfield conditions, both with the sun and with the wind, which really kicked up. You saw Doug Hodo start to come in on a fly ball early and then have to make a hasty retreat and make a catch over the head for one of the inning-ending outs. Eric Kennedy, with the shades down, was trying to shade his eyes with the setting sun. I made a lot of references to this early in the ballgame because I thought it was important to point this out, because I could tell that the players were really battling the sun. And so the references that I was making a lot to that were to the shadows of the field. The shadows come at the ballpark faces kind of southeast. It definitely does not face north or northeast, as is in the case of UFC Udish Falk Field. It faces southeast, and normally, you're going in the face of the prevailing breeze. That's why that ballpark, which is a spacious, expansive ballpark, plays even bigger. Part of the reason when a ballpark can play bigger is very simple. Very simply put, it's ballpark design. In today's age of ballpark construction, and I like to refer to it as green seats and lots of suites, because that's the way that a lot of ballparks are built these days. You have the green seats that are, aesthetically pleasing. And then you have lots of suites that are there because those are the money makers for the ball club, whether it's a professional or a collegiate team. You have that. Also, in a lot of these ballparks, they're asymmetrically designed. In other words, you get angles jutting out down the foul lines. The outfield fences has nooks and crannies and angles and things like that. Probably the best example of that is the one in Oklahoma City where the Longhorns play in Bricktown, the Chickasaw Bricktown ballpark where they play the Big 12 tournament. I think I've almost got it. I may have it. I'm going to try this. I may have it committed to memory, the actual field dimensions in Oklahoma City. Down the left field line, it's 335 feet. Not 340, excuse me. It's 340 down the left field foul line. Then the ballpark runs out, and this is where you can see it written on the painted on the outfield walls. Coming across, it goes to 350, then it goes to 377 out by the home team bullpen. Then it juts out to its deepest part of the ballpark at straightaway 400 feet. Then it comes back in to 365 at the right center power alley, 350 to straightaway right field, and 325 down the right field line. Those are the dimensions in Oklahoma City. But that's an example, a perfect example of what I'm talking about with asymmetrical designing. So you have the outfield fence jutting in, and some it's done for different reasons. Some of it is the topography they're working with. Some of it is the real estate that they have in terms of how they arrange the bullpen, if you have outfield seating, outfield suites, those kinds of things. And some of it was where how it's landlocked up against buildings or things like that. Then you have a ballpark that's kind of like UFC Udish Fogg Field, which is 340 down the left field line, 325 down the right field line, and then it's 370 to the left center power alley, 365 to the right center power alley. It comes in a little bit, it goes out a little bit to the deepest reaches, as I say, of UFC Udish Fogg Field. It's 405 feet to deepest left center and deepest right center, and 400 feet to straightaway center field. So it's a little bit, it is asymmetrical. In other words, the symmetry of it is not, they're not exactly the same down the foul lines and the power alleys. Well, that's not the case here in Omaha. At TD Ameritrade Park, it is 330 down the foul lines, 375 to the 335 down the foul lines, 375 to the power alleys, and 408 feet to straightaway center field. So it's kind of almost like an oval, and it curves around. There's also ample foul territory, which helps pitchers because guys can catch pop-ups. That happened. A couple of Longhorns popped out last night, and one of the Mississippi State players popped out as well in foul territory where it might otherwise, in an asymmetrical park, have gone out of play. That's not the case here. It's kind of like it's almost like an egg, like an oval, the way it works out. But it's a beautiful ballpark, but it faces southeast. Normally, the southerly breeze, the prevailing breeze, comes right in the face of the hitters. So it makes already a spacious, expansive ballpark play even larger. Well, that hadn't been the case through the first three games that were played at the College World Series. NC State hitting home runs, Stanford hitting a home run, even with NC State taking care of them in the first game. In the night game that went 12 innings between Vanderbilt and Arizona, that featured home runs, long balls hit. The first game of the day between Tennessee and Virginia brought about home runs. I'm just looking right now. I'm looking at the box score on that. There was one home run hit by that and a lot of deep alley shots in that. And then, of course, last night there wasn't a home run hit until the ninth inning when Mike Antico led off with a home run. And that was a typical Antico home run, by the way, a ball that got out of the ballpark in a hurry. Just was a deep shot, and it was a line drive shot and got out to right. So normally that ballpark's going to play pitcher-friendly, and it did to a certain extent last night, but the wind was blowing out. Still in all, guys weren't driving the ball out, which tells you also something else about the job that the pitchers were doing on both sides, because Ty Madden pitched very well. He really did in getting a hard luck defeat. He went seven innings. He scattered the four hits, did allow the two runs. One of those came on a sac fly, but the leadoff walk was what hurt there. I could hear Keith Moreland's voice ringing in our ears talk about leadoff walks scoring about 68% of the time in college baseball. That was a big thing. It was a walk and a base hit. He had runners on the corners with nobody out, got a strikeout. Then there was a sac fly to bring in the first run of the ballgame. We're two outs. But at that point, then Brad Cumbest hits a shot down the right field line, and it is fair by about a foot, but fair, just inside the line. In fact, they even went to replay just to review it, but it landed in the dirt down that right field line for a triple, got the second run home. We didn't know at the time that would be all the runs that Mississippi State, A, would score, or B, even need to win. But Bednar was pitching so well, he had only allowed the one hit, he had only walked one batter, he was on that strikeout scheme. He had one where he had seven in a row and one where he had six in a row, and he wound up with 15 strikeouts in the ballgame. And that's what's the frustrating part and what gets very difficult for guys to be able to deal with is the strikeouts. Landon Sims comes in. Remember, Sims is the guy who struck out 10 Longhorns in the game back on February 20th, and he started off blowing guys away with strikeouts, and struck out the side. He came in after the leadoff hit surrendered by, or the walk surrendered by Bednar in the bottom half of the seventh inning, and came in and went bang, 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 three straight strikeouts there. And then the eighth got two more, and then in the ninth got one, but that's when the Longhorns went after him too. You know, you measure the aggression that you need at the plate balanced against being smart and not expanding outside the zone. There's that gray area, that sliding scale between being aggressive at the plate and chasing. And there's where the Longhorns really struggled last night, was to find the proper balance between being aggressive at the plate, which they have been throughout the year, and chasing. And if you're aggressive at the plate, you're going to strike out some anyway. This team has had more than its share of strikeouts at the plate this season. But you had that, and yet Mike Antico drives a ball out of the ballpark. So you get that. Then an absolutely incredible at-bat by Ivan Melendez. So there's two down, and the Longhorns are down to their final out. And he quickly gets down, no balls and two strikes. So they're one strike away from the game being over. He works eight more pitches in the at-bat, a 10-pitch at-bat, and drives a ball to left field for a base hit. Then comes Cam Williams. He gets behind 0-2 in the count. And then he comes through with a base hit up the middle. Now you have runners on the corners. Melendez have been replaced by the pinch runner, Dylan Campbell, who was representing the tying run. And Hodo gets to the plate and has a count of 2-0. And you could see what Doug was trying to do. He's trying to drive the ball to right, to push it through on the right side, as he's done all season long, to get the run home from third, and couldn't get it past the second baseman, Scotty DeBrule, who made a good play on it and got it to it. So that's how it ends. So Texas falls 2-1. Now they have a day off today. As we mentioned, they're practicing right now as we speak. And then as they continue with their practice, they'll do that today, practice till about noon. And then they'll come back tomorrow against Tennessee. And this year's edition of the College World Series is a classic example of how this tournament works. It doesn't matter once you get here about pedigrees or national seeds. There are two national seeds playing today, an elimination game, as I call it, the Pac-12 Invitational, Arizona and Stanford. Arizona was the number 5 national seed. Stanford was the 9th seed. One of them's going home after today. Tomorrow, you've got the number 2 seed and the number 3 seed playing in the tournament in an elimination game, Texas and Tennessee. One UT team that wears orange is going home tomorrow. Either it's Tennessee or it's Texas. So the national seeds do get knocked off here. In the winner's bracket tonight, you do have the number 4 national seed, Vanderbilt, which beat the 5 seed Arizona in that great 12-inning game on Saturday night. But they're playing a North Carolina State team that wasn't seeded at all going into the tournament. State beat Stanford pretty soundly. And, of course, State was the team that knocked off Arkansas, the number 1 national seed, a week ago today when they won that, or Sunday when they won. So they've got that game in the winner's bracket tonight. And then tomorrow, after the Texas-Tennessee elimination game, you've got Mississippi State, who was the 7 seed, and they're in action against Virginia, another unseeded team. In fact, Virginia was a 3 seed in its regional in Columbia, South Carolina. Won that, then beat Dallas Baptist to win the Super Regional. But they're playing with a great deal of confidence. They got great pitching, did the Cavaliers yesterday, from Andrew Abbott and then from Matt Wyatt. They have an incredible story, a great story with their catcher, Logan Michaels, who had not homered all season long, who hit a home run. He went 3-for-4 at the game, scored 3 runs, drove in 2 runs. And the story was, of course, his father was getting to see him for the first time. His father's been dealing with pancreatic cancer. And they'd had there was kind of the heart tug and tussle for Logan Michaels at times about whether he could stay on campus and wanted to go home and be with his dad. And his father told him, no, you need to be where you're going to be. This is where you're destined to be. And so he did. He stayed on at Virginia. And then his father, feeling well enough to travel, comes up here to Omaha, watches his son play. He hits his first home run of the season, helps Virginia win the game, all on Father's Day. Sometimes the world just works out that way. So, Texas will play Tennessee tomorrow, and the winner stays alive and has Wednesday off, then comes back and will play Thursday against the loser of Mississippi State in Virginia. It'll be another elimination game, and they'll need to win that, and then they would come back Friday and would play whoever wins that Mississippi State-Virginia game. They would have to beat them twice, once on Friday, once on Saturday, in order to get to the championship series. So it's no question an uphill climb for the Longhorns right now. They're going to have to do it. But it's a little easier to do the uphill climb in this environment, in this format, than it is in Oklahoma City, where you're having to play on consecutive days. You lose Wednesday, you play Thursday, you play Friday, and you got to win twice on Saturday. You have to play four games in 3 days just to get to the championship on Sunday. Here, they still have to win four games, but the four games are extrapolated out over 6 days. So you have an opportunity to get through it if your pitching's deep enough. And we know the Longhorns have deep pitching. Pete Hansen pitched two innings of scoreless relief, looked very, very sharp. His first action since the Sunday win over Fairfield in the regional. And he only threw 26 pitches. Day off today. He obviously is not slated to pitch tomorrow. If the Longhorns win that game, he can come back and then another day off. And then he could come back and make the start on Thursday in the elimination game Texas would have against the loser of Mississippi State of Virginia. So we'll talk more about that coming up. However, coming up here shortly, we'll get to our Longhorn Notebook, and that means Mike Roach, recruiting editor, Horns 24/7, will join us, and and Jeff will be on the program as well. So we'll get to that, and we have Inconceivable coming up later on this hour. Snoop, I didn't even ask you here before we get to the what. Mm-hmm. Tell me what your weekend was comprised of.
Well, it was mostly trying to help my roommate, who I guess some girl he was dating stole his phone and got his car impounded. So
what?
I know.
How are these two things connected?
Man, it's a long story. Anyway, so I've been trying to help him navigate the treachery that befell him in his pursuit of love, I guess.
Wow, okay. See, and here I was complaining about what I started to say. Roger Wallace and I, when we got done with the game broadcast last night, we were packing up. And the way it works here in Omaha, there are four radio broadcast booths. On the day that your team plays, you have access to your booth the entire day, whether you have the day game or the night game. On the days that you are not playing, you do not have access to your booth. More's the point. This year, because of everything that's happened in the pandemic and the way they've had to draw things up, they politely discourage you even from coming to the ballpark on your credential on your on the days that your team isn't playing, because they want to try to keep the numbers down in the press box and all that sort of thing. But you don't have a choice if you got to go and like I had to load in my equipment on Saturday, and that's no big deal. Well, I'm gonna have to go over and later today, because in my haste to pack up, because when you're done with your broadcast for the day, you have to pack up all your equipment, and they give you a key to an individually assigned cabinet. And so you open it up, these two doors, and there's cabinet space to put your broadcast cases in. And they give you the key. They started doing that the first year that they played here at Rosenblatt Stadium in 2011, and Texas was here that year. So I'll never forget, they gave me the key to it, and I lost the key. The first shot out of the box, it was a little key, lost the key to it, and they had to get another. And when Texas came back in 2014, they're like, oh, yeah, you're the dude that lost your key. So fortunately, since then, I've taken good care of it in 2018. And then when they gave me the key to it this year, I actually just put it on the set with my car key for the rental car. And I just kept it on that because it was on a lanyard so that I wouldn't lose it. So you unlock the cabinet and you put your equipment in there. you take the equipment out on your day of a game. So you do that. Well, Roger and I are packing up pretty quickly. We pack everything away and we put it in the cabinet, lock up. I realize when I get back to the hotel, because the work is not yet done, when I get back here to do reports for the morning and start doing homework and prep and things for the show the next day. Well, in doing that, I realize I had accidentally packed the power cable, the power supply, to my laptop in there. So for the time being, I got enough juice to get me through here, but that's one of those things that happens. So the point that I was driving about all this is that Roger and I, we leave, and then we spent over an hour driving around Omaha last night trying to find a place to eat. You believe that? You see, never have the problem with that. It's 24-hour restaurants there, sports bars are probably. No, everything's shutting down early. We spent over an hour. Part of the reason was we went to five different places where we checked on apps or on the web through Google that were open. Walked in or walked up to it, and they said, yeah, we're not open. We just hadn't changed that on our website. That happened to us five times. Everything ranging from sports bars to IHOP, from a tavern, bar and grill to a Denny's. I mean, there were five places we went to, actually got out of the car, walked in. At one place we went in, sat down, and went, oh, yeah, we're not serving anymore. We're on last call. Like, okay. So that was an hour plus that we'll never get back. So that just compounded the evening and made it a little more challenging. But it's a brand new day. We'll see where it goes from here. Up next, we'll have our Longhorn Notebook when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Hour.
It's getting to the point. Today. Yeah, Crosby, Stills, and Nash with Sweet Judy Blue Eyes. It's Sweet Blue Skies here in Omaha, Nebraska. Craigway with you in Omaha. My co-host, the pride of Northwest Williamson County and a proud graduate of Florence High School.
Damn straight.
Former honorable mention all-district offensive lineman of the Florence Buffaloes, and you know him best for his outstanding work on Horns 24/7, as well as our regular Monday guest coming up here momentarily. My co-host, Jeff Howe, and fresh from a brand-new, hot-off-the-press edition of the Blitz podcast, correct?
Longhorn Blitz will be dropping everywhere you get your podcast tomorrow morning, talking about the Big 12 in 2021, so a good conversation, as always, with my co-hosts, Matt Butler and Rod Babers.
And the folks will hear it tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. On the Horn, unfortunately hearing it at 7 because it would not be preempted by what would have been a Longhorn baseball winner's bracket game. Instead, it'll be an elimination game at 1 o'clock. So it'll be on at 7, correct, tomorrow evening?
That is correct, Craig. I will give my thoughts on baseball coming up here in the second hour of the show, but
sure.
We got to get to the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Doors. Go to cpdoors.com.
And we know what Monday's notebook brings, Jeff.
That's right. The Stampede drops every Monday morning at 8 a.m. It was there bright and early coming off of a visit weekend. And joining us to discuss it, all recruiting matters football related on the 40 Acres, on the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline, Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach. Mike, thanks for the time. I know busy weekend. I'm sure you didn't sleep a whole lot, but thanks for the time nonetheless.
Oh, no problem, fellas. As always, I'm here for whatever you need.
Mike, we know last weekend everything was about Arch Manning and the kind of the visit high coming off of a massive weekend on the 40. A little bit quieter of a weekend in terms of information flow just because there were so many official visitors, not unofficial visitors, this weekend. Based on the feedback you got, Mike, last night and this morning, how would you describe how things went for Steve Sarkisian and company this weekend?
It was a good weekend. I mean, they had, I would say, probably their biggest weekend of, most important 2022 targets on campus, along with a lot of commits. And, I think sometimes people equate no information flow to a bad weekend. That just wasn't the case. You know, with official visits, we can only do so much. I mean, we don't really want to bother those guys during the weekend, during their trip. We don't want to bother sources who are hosting them through the trip. So we kind of let them be. And but I think, you know, if you look at what came out in the Stampede this morning, there are some positives. I think that they made some moves with guys, including C.J. Williams, the wide receiver from Modern Day, Kelvin Banks, the offensive tackle from Humble Summer Creek. And I think that, you know, they had some really strong visits. If you look at the kind of feedback from Evan Stewart and, you know, Connor Robertson, even what we've heard on Denver Harris and Terrence Brooks. So they put themselves in a good position. I think people are frustrated at the amount of or at the lack of commitments at this point. But that's just kind of the nature of the way this summer has gone for everybody. These kids want to take their trips. I think that in the end, a lot of kids from these weekends will come out and end up in this class. It's not going to happen immediately. And so people need to continue to be patient there.
Mike, before we jump back into the 22 class and talk about some of these visitors specifically, let's go to 23. And we have not had an opportunity to talk to you on this show since the Reuben Owens decommitment. But for those who weren't tracking it or maybe want a little more information, you've had a couple of days to gather information, digest it. Where do things sit with Texas and Reuben Owens, the number two ranked running back prospect in the country in the class of 2023?
I think Texas is still very much in that race. You know, it's just, when he committed as early as he did, I think everybody probably expected this to happen at some point. And so, he wants to take a look around and look at all of his options. But, from what his camp is saying, Texas still has the lead. I think for Owens, one thing that does stand out is he is a Texas kid, and he very much likes the idea of, you know, being the guy that plays at his home state. So, you know, Texas just needs to stay the course with him and, continue recruitments. A lot like the Evan Stewart recruitment, where I think they could definitely win him back. They've just got to kind of stay. Sometimes when a kid decommits, there's almost an involuntary, let's both go our separate ways. And I think as long as they avoid that and kind of just stay the course, I think there's a very good chance they get Reuben back in this class.
Horns 24/7 recruiting editor Mike Roach joining us here on Light the Tower on the Horn. Mike, let's get back into the official visitors. Two guys you've already mentioned, Evan Stewart and C.J. Williams. Massive, massive, massive weekend for Andre Coleman with two major targets on campus. But based on your reports in the Stampede, it sounds like Andre Coleman put his best foot forward, and it sounds like Texas, I don't know, Mike, if you want to say right where they want to be in these recruitments, but they're definitely in the thick of it for both guys at this point.
I think, not only those two guys for Andre Coleman, Shaz Preston was also on campus, which was big for him. Brandon Thompson was in for an unofficial visit. And then Armani Winfield, who's already committed, was there. So, really big weekend for Andre Coleman. But, talking to Evan Stewart, it sounds like he and C.J. Williams both really enjoyed the film breakdowns and conversations with Andre Coleman. And, Evan had told me that he kind of almost figured out that Andre is a completely different person in person than he is on the phone. So he said, you don't see his personality shine as much over the phone as you do when you really get with him. And so he, was kind of impressed by that. So, yeah, I think he had a really good, really strong weekend with those guys, and didn't hurt that Malik Murphy was there and to help out. And so I think, I think he gets some guys out of this group, and I think that this weekend will be a big reason why.
Yeah, you mentioned Malik Murphy, Mike. We always talk about the quarterback in a recruiting class. Kind of by default, whether they want to or not, they're counted on to have that Pied Piper effect in recruiting. Based on the feedback you've gotten, again, last night and this morning, how do you think guys, specifically those offensive skill guys and guys on offense, period, connected with Malik Murphy this weekend?
I think from a personality standpoint, they all love him. I mean, Evan Stewart talked a lot about him. C.J. Williams always talks a lot about him. So, Shaz Preston said that was his first time meeting him, but, he really enjoyed hanging out with him. I think if you've ever been around Malik or talked to him for a few minutes, he's just a really easy person to get along with and like. And so, I think they all connected from that standpoint. I think, in this day and age, I'm not sure there's one guy even an Arch Manning or a Quinn Ewers that's going to, on his own, bring in a whole bunch of talent. But I also always think, you know, it's better than not if your guy can talk and be magnetic a little bit. It at least gets guys to the table. So, I think – and the most impressive thing about Malik was he didn't really talk at all about his experience on the visit. I mean, his goal was to go there and help add guys to this class. I mean, when I asked him what the visit was for him, he said it was almost perfect. The only thing that wasn't perfect was he didn't get anybody to commit on the spot. So, that's kind of his thing. And I asked him even about, taking other visits, as we've seen other committed guys do, and he just feels as a quarterback it's not a good look for him to do so. So you got to love having a guy who's that committed, that all in on everything, kind of leading that class.
Yeah, Mike, one guy I didn't mention with those other receivers, you brought him up, Shaz Preston out of the state of Louisiana. This recruitment, Mike, feels like one that falls under, I like to put it in this file, look, you feel like you're playing behind a certain school. In this case, it's LSU. And whatever you got to do just to keep that guy coming back, make him want to keep coming back for unofficials or whatever. It sounds like at least Texas got to that point with Shaz Preston this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. I don't know what it's going to take to overcome LSU, but in case something happens, I mean, what if LSU, I guess, had a disastrous year and fired their coaching staff, and maybe you put yourself in a position to capitalize. Not only LSU, you're probably going to have to put yourself in that same place with Alabama as well. They're going to be a big factor for Preston. But, yeah, I mean, I think that Texas, the visit went for him as well as it could have, but that's just a case of it's really hard to overcome LSU for a kid that they want in Louisiana. Talking to people around Preston, the visit was great, but, LSU is going to be really tough to beat.
Mike, we've spent a lot of time, you've spent a lot of type space, it seems like, for the last year and a half, talking about Terrence Brooks and Denver Harris. Texas got both of those defensive back prospects on campus this weekend. What's the feedback you've gotten on both of those guys and their visits?
Going into the visit, I thought this was really big for Terry Joseph because he was kind of going to be front and center after, they hadn't hosted any corners, recently. So wanted to see kind of what the feedback was about him. Talking to Chet Brooks, who's the father of Terrence Brooks and a former NFL player himself and a former Texas A&M DB, he was really impressed by just talking ball with Terry Joseph and kind of his track record of development and his, the technique he teaches and things like that. All the way around, I think they thought the visit was very thorough. Now, what Texas is going up against there is a kid that Nick Saban has kind of personally targeted and talks to a lot every week. So they're going head-to-head with Nick Saban's personal project. And so that's always going to be tough. And he's Terrence left Austin and is headed for Ohio State today and then Alabama at the end of the week. So he's going to have two more visits. With Denver Harris, I think an important step is they really kind of impressed Denver's mom. And how it works in recruiting, where if you got the mom on your side, that could certainly help. And if you're the closer option and the mom signs off, it could be the potential thing that pushes you over the top. And so with Texas being 2 hours away and schools like, Alabama and LSU being a little further away, I think that that's kind of an important distinction as well. So I think if you ask me coming out of the weekend which chances I like better, it's probably Denver Harris, but Texas is still in for a tough fight with both those guys.
You can get him on Twitter at MikeRoach247, but more importantly, get his work at Horns247, and the Stampede drops each and every Monday morning. Mike, you even got it lined up to put this thing out before you go on vacation at the end of the month, correct?
Yeah, so I'll be in Las Vegas next Sunday for the last day of visits. I will write the Stampede then. It will come out Monday morning, and I will be on vacation during the dead period.
And look,
hey, Mike, what's your game of choice in Vegas?
I'm a craps guy, but it's really hard when I'm with my wife to convince her to stand at a craps table with me for a few hours. So I understand as much.
Nice.
And look at Mike timing his vacation so perfectly as to coincide with the next dead period.
That's recruiting.
That is indeed recruiting.
When she married me, she didn't know that we were going to have to get married in the spring and that she was going to have to take her vacations in February and late August. And that was the only time we could go do this thing. But thank
such,
God.
Such is yeah. life. Such is life.
Well, and I'm sure both of you saw this. As one of the coaches tweeted out over the weekend, said, has anybody noticed how many coaching anniversaries there are in June? High school coaches I'm talking about, because they're taking vacations there in June. And so how many anniversaries there are in June? It's that such is life of coaching. No question about it. Hey, and Mike, as always, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks for taking the time. We look forward to it again next Monday.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
All right. Mike Roach, Horns 24/7. I mean, and that kind of makes sense, doesn't it, Jeff, that you're going to have anniversaries in June, because that's when a lot of them are getting married, in June?
The latter part of the month, yeah, right around the 4th of July. You know, you work that first month, yeah. You take some time off, and then usually back at it right around coaching school. Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, there you go. Sometimes it doesn't make sense. That's why we call it inconceivable. And that's next when we continue with Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Attention homeowners. As inflation continues to accelerate, so will mortgage interest.
Newt Daniel.
Inconceivable.
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 You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable, as always, means that it's brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his outstanding staff at Austin Orthopedics. If you have orthopedic issues, surgery perhaps, needing help, consultation, or just curious about how to prevent sports-related injuries, check them out on the web at austin-orthopedics.com. Jeffrey, lead us off here on the Inconceivable File.
Yeah, I've got one, Craig. So, you know, we talk a lot about trading cards on this show. We have Trading Card Friday, courtesy of our yes. wonderful partners with Brown Eye Clothing, browneyeclothing.com. Well, there was some stuff that our partners at Brown Eye had given us that I opened this weekend, and there was a card in there that blew my mind in terms of how much it's worth, Craig, and I won't get into specific prices, but I've got five cards in front of you. Snoop, you'll recognize some of these.
Ooh, I see the one to the fourth.
I've purchased all of these. Shout out to Walt and the folks at Card Traders of Austin. God. That's a 1990 Frank Thomas Topps rookie, a 1989 Gary Sheffield Upper Deck rookie card, a 1989 Thurman Thomas Pro Set rookie card, the 1989 David Robinson Hoops yes. rookie card, and a Zion Williamson Hoops rookie card. Craig, would you like to know that what I paid for those five cards... This card I hold in my hand, it is a Pokemon trainer card. It's the Pokemon Center Lady card. This yeah. card is worth more than all five of those I just put up in front of the camera on Twitch.
Therein lies.
And I had to ask the guys at Card Traders. I said, so you're telling me Pokemon Lady is worth more than David Robinson? They said, yes, Pokemon Center Lady is worth more than David Robinson. So... my mind was blown. All five of those cards, the Zion card is new, but four massive cards from my childhood and Pokemon Center Lady. I'm told this is a full art card, Craig.
I'm coming in there to look at it.
I'm not sure exactly what that means.